This is Lori Atkins from the Happy Nipple Podcast back with another great episode. And these were really highly anticipated episodes of the Happy Nipple because we're talking about tongue ties. Everybody wants to know about tongue ties. What does it mean? What does it look like? How does it affect breastfeeding? Well, we have the answers and the great discussion with the wonderful Susan Forrester, a Forrester Lactation in West Hartford, Connecticut, and Rob Shamey, who does an excellent revision, work in out of Ware, Massachusetts. So we're going to have a great conversation with both of them in a two-parter because there was so much information we couldn't put it in one. So I'm here with the nip tip of the week, which is my first video nip tip, I think. Hello. And so I want to introduce the discussion of tongue tie or ankyloglossia. There's lots of ways that you can search around and find out what this means. But basically, a tongue tie is a piece of fascial tissue under the tongue. I have a great one. Sometimes they interfere with breastfeeding, and that can be a serious issue. So we're here to talk about how restrictions in the mouth can affect breastfeeding, can affect sleep, can affect some other things as children age, but our focus is mostly on breastfeeding and how to see if your child has some restrictions in their mouth and what that means. Do you have painful breastfeeding? Do you have difficult breastfeeding? Do you have ineffective breastfeeding with poor baby weight gain? So many ways that tongue tie can enter the breastfeeding realm and cause problems. And so our discussions are going to focus on exams, you know, how we look for the possibility of a tongue tie or a lip tie or other oral restrictions, and how we then work within our community and within our scope of practice to refer to professionals who can diagnose and treat if possible. We talk about body work. What does that mean? Who does that? And how do I find a body worker? So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about this team approach that really is effective in treating babies who are struggling to breastfeed. And most people who pursue this care are pretty happy that they did for their child, but it really takes a village and it takes some time. And it takes different professionals to kind of plot the way that you want to move forward with breastfeeding your baby. So take a listen to my two esteemed colleagues in our conversation. I think you'll be interested as a parent, and I think you'll be really interested as a lactation professional. Maybe you're a new IBCLC. Maybe you are someone who's another kind of breastfeeding helper that needs to know how to refer your clients to a different level of service and a different level of care to get the optimum breastfeeding experiences. So take a listen and enjoy, and absolutely leave us feedback. If it's something you want to share, you want to share your story, you can leave that on Facebook, on Instagram at the Happy Nipple Podcast, and Facebook at Oh Baby Lactation. And we'll be posting links to the podcasts when they drop. Thanks for listening. Hello, hello, my friend Susan Forrester. How are you?
I'm good, Lori. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for joining me today. I mean, this is such a thrill. You and I talk all the time and we're friends, but Susan is a mentor of mine, and I'm always grateful for her input and support as I came along as a little baby lactation consultant. Not that long ago, 10 years ago. So
yeah.
And Susan's been up and ripping and roaring in Connecticut doing her awesome work in a private practice when I didn't even know a private practice could exist. So I'm always in awe of you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Laura. That's very sweet.
And I'm not yanking your chain. I am. I'm always amazed at the work you do. And I was happy to bring Susan on to the Happy Nipple Podcast to talk about tongue ties. And some of the social media posts you all may have seen that we have, Dr. Robert Shamey is part of our interview process. It was great talking to him. But he's the provider who does the actual release. So there's so much more about tongue tie that we wanted to bring to our podcast listeners and viewers, because there's a lot more than just a release, isn't there, Susan?
Absolutely. I know. Way
so
more.
I'm going to let her introduce herself, and we're going to kind of set off on our tongue tie discussion and journey and talk about, and we're imagining that our audience is parents and birth providers of all kinds, pediatric providers. We're hoping to learn a little bit more about how we live in this world with babies who have restrictive ties. So Susan, tell us a little bit about you.
So I come from Los Angeles, And I moved to the East Coast to attend graduate school at Columbia. And while I was working on my dissertation in a very different field, I had my first baby and was breastfeeding and had some issues and had hired a lactation consultant. And at that time, I was also attending La Leche League groups, and which I found fantastic for just mothering and breastfeeding and all sorts of things. And I had a friend in graduate school who had had a baby, and I called her up in the hospital to see how she was doing. And she was just telling me this horrible situation and advice. And I said, "Let me help you. Let me call my lactation consultant if she has any, wisdom to share." So I called this woman and I told her how aggravated I was and that it made me so mad, it made me want to become a lactation consultant. And
Wow.
she said, "Well, why don't you?" And I'm like, "Oh, no, I'm getting my PhD. I'm not gonna do that. I have to finish this." And I just found myself really not enjoying writing my dissertation. And I really enjoyed breastfeeding. And I made a very strategic but hard decision to shift gears.
Oh.
And I became a La Leche League leader. And while I was doing that, I was working towards becoming an IBCLC, a lactation consultant. And that was my journey. And so I became board certified in 2002, right after I had my third child. And
Wow,
that's my story.
what a great story. So you really were pulled to the profession and into the work. Wow. Well, it shows what you do. So tell me what brought you to, I use the word tongue tie land. What, this is not something that's been in our purview for a long time in lactation. We kind of had to learn this as we go along, correct? Isn't that kind of what's been happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first started, we learned about tongue tie, but it was only that very obvious right to the tip
Right.
type one tongue tie. And if it wasn't that, it wasn't a tongue tie. And I think about all the people before we learned how it can manifest itself differently, right? How it can appear not just to the tip, but anywhere along the underside of the tongue. I think about all the families who just couldn't help and would love to go back and relook and probably view these babies with a totally different lens.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do think for those of us, particularly in private practice, if you don't make an effort to get trained and pursue continuing education with a lot of regularity, you are going to be underserving your babies and your families. Because being able to competently assess oral function is what we should be doing,
Yeah,
right?
it's
We
part
are
of what we
feeding
do.
specialists. We are feeding specialists. And I absolutely understand that we're not all at a level playing field, right? But that's where conferences come in, right? I have spent the last, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, but really, I would say the last 10 of it has really been focused on understanding oral anatomy, function, how a baby moves. Because if you don't get that part of it, you can't really do a complete functional assessment. And that's really what we're talking about. And, and I was saying that people who are new in the field, they need to learn about this. It's a really important part of what we do. It's not the only thing that we do, but there's so many great resources out there.
Yeah. And I think parents come to us expecting help with this. So, yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, if they come to an IBCLC, I feel like they are looking for that next step from us. And if you are seeing babies from the outside or even in the hospital, I think you're right. It is within your purview to make sure you understand how to assess and refer. Right? Because that's part of what we do. We're not snipping them ourselves. We're certainly being able to assess oral function. And there's lots of different ways to talk about that, right? There's each person has their kind of ways to look, but I think that we need to at least establish good, solid referrals. And even people who maybe oral function isn't in their purview, but they see that something's wrong and understand the basics of what breastfeeding should feel and look like. to refer to an IBCLC, and we're going to probably talk a lot about that as we go along, right? So let me ask what you see when parents are coming to you. You know, there's a breastfeeding parent who's coming with blank. What are you seeing that comes in the door? I mean, I know you're looking at all the babies that come in, but what are your kind of the big you know, lit up signs that tell you that there could be a problem with tongue tie or lip tie or all of the other ties?
Yeah. I mean, of course I'm looking at baby's weight, right? So if a baby is exclusively breastfeeding or predominantly breastfeeding and they're not gaining weight well, there could be a few things going on, right? There's the baby's role, the baby's mechanical milk transfer, right? How well can the baby remove milk? But on the other side, there's how much milk is the mother breastfeeding parent producing, right? So those two things are like two halves of a coin. Sure. So I'm looking at, you know, weight gain. I'm looking at milk transfer, which we do with our very expensive sensitive scales that only we have. I am looking at how the mother parent is feeling, like how do her nipples feel, right? How are her breasts feeling? Are they feeling like they're getting, well, emptied, you know, going from being full to being less full?
Right.
What is the baby's disposition at the breast? Is the baby frustrated, right? Mm. So when I start my consult, you know, I sit and I listen to the mom's story, like, tell me what's been going on, right? That takes up a good, you know, 30, 45 minutes. And if there's been a difficult labor and delivery, that extends that because we owe that parent just that time to listen, right?
Sure.
For them to talk to. They don't often have a chance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always move on the baby's timetable, right? So if the baby's starting to get a little futzy and moving around, I'm like, okay, let's just stop. Let's get the baby weighed and see what's happening when they're breastfeeding, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really common to not have optimal positioning. That's an easy mistake to make. I would say that most parents often just nipple feed because that makes logical sense, but that's really not the best positioning approach. So I kind of help them adjust that with any pillows that they're using.
Mm-hmm.
I try to help them and then let them do it themselves so they can have some sort of sense of taking ownership over that. And we see how the baby is doing, right?
Mm.
And so we go through all of that. We do the weight transfer from the milk. And then at that point, you know, I do a complete assessment of the baby, right? It's not just what is milk transfer telling me, because I can have a mom whose nipples feel absolutely fine and the baby can appear to be doing well, and you put them on the scale.
Yeah.
And that's why these scales are so important. I have been fooled many, many a time. I'm not ashamed to admit that, right?
No, you're 100% right.
You can have a baby that really looks like they're doing a bang up job, and you put them
or
on the scale
and you hear them. You're like, how are you not swallowing? You weigh them and they've transferred, you know,
right,
two of an ounce, and you're like, what? Yeah.
Yeah. But interestingly on that,
I
remember years and years and years ago, before I really understood about optimal oral function and how to assess it, when I would hear a baby with very loud gulping sounds, I used to think, oh, he's getting a lot of milk. Now I understand that's the work of swallowing, and that is often associated with tongue tie. So if the tongue can't move in a nice wave-like fashion to handle that bolus of milk,
right?
You hear that loud guttural swallowing. Like, that's a big yellow
right,
flag
but it's
for
not
me.
Swallowing anything that the baby needs. It's
right.
not necessarily right.
Yeah. So, you know, there's no one mother baby dyad that looks the same ever. It's so completely unique to milk production, baby's oral anatomy, how the baby is moving, all
right.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I do an oral assessment with every single baby, every time. I don't care if I've seen that baby, if it's the seventh visit, I'm still putting my gloves on and I'm assessing. every single time.
Talk to me a little bit. We're going to take a, I told you we're going to take a couple of side trips. Bear with me. But tell me how you, in situations where you've examined a baby once and then changed and then examined the same baby again later and found something different. Has that happened to you?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about that, because it happens to me and I'm always like, all right, this baby's kind of unfolding from being born and we're finding something maybe we didn't find in the beginning and now we're finding something later. And the parents look at you like, what? How can it be different? Go ahead, tell me.
Yeah. I mean, so when I do an initial assessment, I am kind of doing top to tail, right? So I don't just put my fingers in the baby's mouth. I start by connecting with the baby. I do some gentle movement. I want to see what the baby's range of motion is with their head and neck. You know, most babies come out with a side turning preference. So I want to see how it is on the other side. Are they lifting their shoulders when I turn their head to one side? How are they moving? I check to see what their shoulders are like. How relaxed are their shoulders? So I do some arm lifts and some leg movements. So I want to see how they're doing that way. Because, and it depends in part on positioning in utero. It depends on how the baby came into this world, how old the baby is, how much containment, like how much they're being swaddled or being left in their car seat or on their backs too much. Like all of that goes into how a baby is moving. And so then I do an oral assessment. And I always explain to parents, because they're always fascinated, like, wow, no one's ever examined the baby this thoroughly. And I'm like, but I say the tongue is a huge muscle in the baby's body. And all that we're seeing is just the surface, the blade of the tongue, but it extends all the way down here, and that there are numerous ligaments and tendons and muscles that are attaching here that impact the entire body and how the baby moves. Right. So if I'm seeing someone for the first time and I do an assessment, and let's say the baby's not moving its tongue sideways optimally, we call that lateralization. I just make note of these things. I'm very transparent with my families about what I'm seeing. And I make a note of everything in my chart. And then I give the families, I almost, with just a few exceptions. And when I say that, like, if it's a 3-day-old baby, I'm not going to load the family with lots of stuff to do. Right. And so it really just depends on who's sitting in front of me. But, you know, if it's a week old baby or maybe a 2-week old baby or older, I'm going to give the family 3 or 4 exercises to do with their infant. And I'm going to tell them, explain to them that we need to get the baby moving because the baby can't really move on its own. Right. It needs us to do them, help them do everything. And I kind of call it, you know, like baby yoga. Just some stretches and exercises. And the way I always phrase it, I'm like, look, babies are a little boring, and this gives you something fun and therapeutic to do with your baby. And I explained that getting the baby moving, what appears on the outside, is going to impact oral function and how the tongue is moving. And so I give them some homework assignments to do in addition to any other lactation related homework. You know, if they have to work on their milk production or heal their nipples, all of that. So then sometimes they come back and the baby's moving better. And if the baby's moving better in terms of like how they're moving their head, their neck, right, opening up here, sometimes things improve orally. So, and look, it's sometimes funny. It's like, I might make a note that the baby's having a hard time lateralizing to the left. And the next time they come in and the left is fine, but the right isn't good. Did I do my charting wrong? I'm like, no, things happen. Or the palate might feel differently. Right. So things change. That's why, you know, the consults take a while because you have to reassess how everything is going. You're observing and then you're doing an exam again. So things do change.
And I try to remind clients too that, you know, an hour and a half is probably about where we're going to be. And because people get exhausted, the bait, you can almost see them kind of drifting out and going away there a little bit. But you're right. I think when parents are very surprised about the level of assessment that we do, and looking for that, and then talking about the other things that that can come from a tongue tie. One of the biggest things I see is we didn't really touch on maternal pain. And you said a little bit about damaged nipples, but that's kind of one of the columns in my head when I see somebody who comes in or, you know, who says, oh, my friend says that my baby has a tongue tie, or I went on a Facebook group and they said my baby has a tongue tie, or I went to the pediatrician. Thank God I'm getting referrals sometimes from pediatricians who would say, can you examine for a tongue tie? Because that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a whole other subject that we can discuss about how people can and can't talk about it. But yeah, I think they're surprised at the level of assessment that we can do. And they're happy that someone takes the time to do it, right? But going back to maternal pain is one of the biggest things I think that women and nursing parents kind of just try to plow through, don't you think? Like, they're like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it work. And then they have bleeding and terrible chunks of skin off nipples. And if anyone's listening to this and feeling ick, it does happen. We don't want it to get that bad, but it's one of the things that can be one of the symptoms from a baby who cannot lift, extend or lift their tongue and ends up kind of biting the nipple to get milk out. So maternal pain, I think, in my purview, especially lately, seems to really connect with mental health issues too. You know, I've seen,
of course,
you know, this terrible nipple pain and then babies who aren't gaining, right? That's a whole nother ball of wax. Babies who aren't gaining weight and the parents that are getting those strong signals. So when we're talking about tongue tie and lip tie and oral ties that are really impacting breastfeeding, we also are talking about a strong connection to maternal mental health. And so,
if you're in pain,
right?
I mean, it's one thing if you just breastfed one time a day,
right?
Like pretty much most people can endure something uncomfortable or painful once a day.
I can do it. Yeah.
But if you have to do something that causes toe curling, seeing stars kind of pain 12 times a day, it's unreasonable. And it's really, it makes so much sense why women give up.
Yes.
And I think the other part of it is, and I'm just so disheartened that it just, this myth keeps perpetuating that it's supposed to hurt. And it's not supposed to hurt. Pain is your body's way of guiding you to getting out of pain. And
love that.
You know, your nipples are loaded with nerve endings,
right?
I think Mother Nature designed it so that we have a good feedback system for knowing when something feels right, then it's comfortable. If it doesn't feel right, you're supposed to fix it. And so families think, they hear, oh, breastfeeding is supposed to hurt. Right. So they're assuming a baseline of normalcy. Pain is normal. And so then, of course, if you don't address it, it's just going to worsen. And then they get to the point where they're in really terrible shape. And of course, they give up. It makes so much sense. And so I keep hoping that that myth is going to get busted somehow, that like, it's not normal for it to hurt. And if they realized, I mean, so this is what I talk about in my prenatals. I just say like, look, if you're in pain, you have to address it immediately. If you let it go too long, it's going to be that much harder to fix and it's going to take that much longer. Right. Mm-hmm. So really pay attention to what your body is telling you.
Right. I think pain too zaps like that. I'm like, I keep making that connection with mental health. I think it zaps your stamina. If you continue, if it hurts, and then you know it's going to hurt the next time too. Like you said, it's not just once a day, it's many times a day. So if a tongue tie is causing pain, it's not necessarily going to get better on its own. We have to talk up. That's number one, right? I think parents think, well, a little stretch. I mean, all of the things that we...
Or you have to toughen them up.
You have to toughen the nipples up with a, you know, with a, we still hear that one, with a washcloth,
of course,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Sandpaper. I mean, that's ridiculous. So there's a lot, you're right. There's a lot of myths and inconsistencies and misinformation out there, but the breastfeeding is going to hurt. And then the other part of it too, is if it hurts, you just said that we can fix it.
Oh yeah.
And that's the thing. Yeah. I think that's what I really want families to hear, is that we can fix that. We can fix it. We can take some nipple rest. You can pump for a little bit. It doesn't mean that we can't address the tongue tie issues and you have to stop. You can pump, or you can use a nipple shield, or you can use some kind of a device when you work with your lactation consultant to figure out to make it better. So That's a strong message, I think, to get out to people. If you have pain and you think it's from a tongue tie, you need help immediately. Don't wait. It's not going to stretch. It's not going to go away. It's not going to just rupture or rip on the baby's fourth birthday. You're not going to make it there breastfeeding.
And I just, I think that there are, so many people who don't realize that we exist. Like, I'm always amazed. Like,
This is
I
so
mean, it's,
true.
and there's all sorts of reasons for that.
Yeah, I know.
Insurance issues, but I always, my wish is that any physician who's dealing with a parent who is breastfeeding, and if there's any problem at all, don't try to fix it. Send them off to the specialist, which is us, right? In the same way that occasionally I will have a baby and I'll be concerned about something that I'm seeing medically. I
And
would
just not sure.
never attempt to assess, diagnose, or treat. I might say, I'm seeing this. I'm a little bit concerned about this. Please go back to your pediatrician, or please go back to your midwife or your OB and talk to them about this, right? I
We do that
just
all
think
the
that
time. Yeah.
we all have our scope of practice and our specializations, and we should embrace that. And it's always so wonderful when I get someone. I just had last week, I had a pediatrician sent someone my way because he thought the baby was tongue-tied, and he was spot on, boy. And I just love the fact that he's like, look, I think your kid is tongue-tied. Go see Susan, right? And they came to me, and I was like, my eyes were bugging out of my head. I'm like, oh, absolutely. That was the best call. You have a great pediatrician. Like,
And
A
so
plus is my book.
it can you also speak to some of the myths? So we're talking about myths and challenges in the field. The myth that all lactation consultants do is see tongue ties, and that's all they do is snip them, and they want to make money. You can make the face. Go ahead. I'm going to let you make the face. You can even make a gesture if you want. Do it under the table.
I'm mature.
I
I
know
will
you're
not do
trying.
that.
I know. I thought I'd send you a fireball. Go ahead.
So if I never saw another tongue-tied baby again, I would be thrilled, right? I derive zero pleasure from telling a family that there is an anatomical structure that is interfering with comfortable, efficient, effective breastfeeding, and that they may have to take their baby for a procedure to address this. Get no joy from that,
No, and to
right?
tell them
And
that it may cost money out it may cost money out of pocket, and you may have to drive to find a provider that does this, and you may get pushback from your pediatrician and all the other. It's almost like there's this internal kind of oh, we have a path to go down, right? Yeah, I think
yeah,
that's fun for any
and I
of
just
us.
think it's Yeah, and I just think it's belittling and insulting for providers to somehow accuse us of like it's a fad. And it's our job. It's the same way it's the job of a cardiologist to assess heart problems and to address them, right? We are feeding specialists, and how the tongue moves, how it functions directly impacts breastfeeding. What I tell families is the first thing your baby's supposed to do with their mouth is latch and remove milk, right? It is its first job,
It's
right?
the only
And
job when
if
they're
a,
newborns. Their lives depend on it.
yeah. And if a baby cannot breastfeed, there is a reason. And it is our job to try to figure it out, right? Now, sometimes there can be some larger issues, right? And we have to work with other specialists to figure it out, right? But to just say, oh, well, there's bottles and formula, that is absolutely fine. If a family chooses to do that, everybody gets to make their own feeding choices. But when we have a family and we've made an assessment that there is some oral dysfunction due to that tethering, and then to have another provider say, no, that's what they say about all babies. It's not true, but not provide an alternative explanation. That's what really upsets me, right? So it's not their specialization, and yet they're willing to invalidate my years of training and experience and say that somehow I'm getting my jollies by assessing this.
Yeah,
Right.
we
So.
don't take kindly. I agree with you. If I never saw another tongue tie baby, it's like I said, I almost get this internal, because you know you have so much education to do with the family, and they're going to drive their own boat if they're
Yep.
going to pursue. We're going to talk about body work in a minute, what that means. But if they're going to pursue that, if they're going to pursue talking to one of the providers that we encourage people to see, if they're going to go down the road at all, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of education and it's a lot for parents to take on to assimilate that and to internalize that and what that means for them.
Yeah. And I do think, just sort of back on this point of somehow this is all we know how to assess, minimizes how much detail we put into our consults and all of the additional problem solving that we're doing. It's never just a tongue tie. There's always other things going on, right? There's positioning, there's how the body work, there is milk production, sore nipples, right? Assessing why does someone have low milk production. It's not always just a matter of, oh, they just not are removing enough milk. There can be endocrine issues,
Oh, there could be a myriad of things, right? Yeah.
anything. And this is what we do. And I wish that there was more acknowledgement that we're always learning something new, right? So, understanding how the human body functions isn't static. It's a dynamic process. And if you think
A
about,
really good point.
hundreds of years, like we've learned so much about the human body and disease and pathology over hundreds of years, right? And it's the same with our profession. We keep learning new things. So, like I was saying before, is that early on, we only used to think of tongue ties right to the very tip. Right. And we know that is not what we're looking at anymore. Right. We're looking at something that's more complex. It's a different anatomical view of things. And, in the same way, I think about like when I was a kid, nobody had a peanut allergy. Nobody.
It's
Okay.
a really
And
good
now
point,
you can't send a kid to school with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
because
Right.
it's so
Or you
much.
think about the, increase in all types of cancers and autoimmune diseases and endocrine issues, right? So diseases are changing. And so to just somehow say like, oh, but what goes on under the tongue doesn't change,
It doesn't,
right?
and it
It's
doesn't
not
matter.
different and it doesn't matter is really it's not, I don't know. It's a strange thing.
I think it almost speaks to the unwillingness of a provider who would say that to learn anything new. And anybody who is listening to you right now is probably nodding their head saying, oh, yeah, providers should always learn in their field. And we know that doctors do, they're supposed to, and they learn things as they go along. I don't know why this is such. Tongue tie could be such a kind of taboo subject. I mean, you and I know that in different parts of the country, there are hospitals that will not let their lactation consultants even discuss tongue tie with families. And that is just
In
malpractice. It's,
our
I,
state too.
it's, yeah, you should point that
Yeah,
out.
in our state too. And there,
That,
yeah,
that's
and there
just
are, yeah.
disgusting, I
And
think.
yeah, it's pretty, I just think it's kind of like medieval medicine.
Yeah,
Like,
that's a great word. Yep. It is. We need to be able to be clear with people. And how can you deny a family the right to feed their baby the way they want to? And then, we can talk about all of the other things that tongue tie has been linked to. We talk about sleep apnea and headaches and oh, all kinds of things. So it's not just one. It's not just breastfeeding.
And but I think what our job, people are coming to us because they want to be able to feed their babies and comfortably. And the desire to breastfeed or chest feed is it's very primal, right? This is not just like,
Absolutely right.
Do I
Yes,
want
you are right.
scrambled eggs or oatmeal for breakfast? Right.
Yeah.
And every mammal is genetically, biologically, neurologically programmed to feed their baby at their breast. That is it. Right. Now, as higher primates, we can think we have more free choice, right? And how we make decisions.
Sure.
But sometimes it doesn't feel that way. And for a lot of people, the breastfeeding is not like, oh, I'm just selfish, I just want to breastfeed. It's very primal. It's really genetic.
It is.
And to not provide adequate information and support for the families that want to breastfeed, is it's sad. I think
It's a
it's really
terrible disservice,
unfortunate.
right? Isn't it a terrible disservice? Yeah. So I think it's important for any lactation consultant out there in listening land to think about connections, to connect to providers in your area, to make connect with parents, connect with other people who can offer body work, who can do the procedure. So I think it kind of pulling your head up and looking around your community to make those connections. And because we have in Connecticut, we have great providers that do all kinds of great work. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to know that that network works for parents, right? And so, I want to touch on the phrase that we use a lot is preferred, and this kind of goes to what I just said, preferred providers, right? And so there's a lot of people who say, I work on tongue-tied babies, and I do that work all the time. But we all know that there are people who do this work who don't understand breastfeeding. I think there's that miss there somewhere, right? So what do you say to someone who is looking to, number one, get services for their tongue-tied baby, if they think their baby's tongue-tied? Number two, for a lactation consultant who may be new to this work, to kind of bring that all together for their patients. That's a loaded question.
There's a lot there.
Go ahead. You
I know I
talk a
can
lot.
talk.
Go ahead. I know you, girl. I love listening. Go.
I think that, addressing any oral issues needs to start with a visit to the lactation consultant, right? It's always harder when I get a family in and they've done the procedure already.
Oh gosh, yes.
Like they've sort of decided that they're worried that they're seeing something. And I'm not saying they aren't seeing something, or someone tells them, oh, I think your baby's tongue-tied, and they're breastfeeding. And then they go and they have it addressed. And then they come to me and I have no baseline of how was the baby moving before. It's a hard position to start from. Not impossible, but it's more challenging, right? So I like to think of what we do when it comes to the tongue tie or any kind of tethered oral tissue, is we're one part of a three-legged stool, right? So the family comes to us, we do our assessment, we tell them what we think is going on. Maybe we have them come back one or two times before we send them out to do other stuff, but sometimes we might say, okay, look, this is what I'm seeing. And the next thing for you to do is to go for body work, right? There are occasionally exceptions, occasionally, rarely, when I might have a family, if the baby, so for example, comes to me and it's less than a week old and very obviously tongue-tied, but moving okay, and the baby can't latch, right? I might say, okay, let's go take care of this. That's the exception, not the rule with me.
Can I
My
stop you for
jet,
a
my,
second?
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. I hear you. Can you explain? I know we've talked about body work a couple of times. People may be listening going, what? Can you
Oh,
explain
yeah.
what that is a little bit?
Yeah. So, what my general protocol, if I have any concerns orally, or for example, if I'm seeing a baby that's just not moving well, it's really tight, like their shoulders are jacked up, they've got no neck, they can't move, right? Right? Or their chin is tucked in, right? Or maybe there's a lot of cranial asymmetry or molding. I will send the family off for body work. And body work can be thought of as sort of manual hands-on therapy. And it's very, very gentle. The pressure that our providers use is like how you test for the ripeness of an avocado,
That's a
right?
great way to put it. Yeah. 5 gram
They're
touch. Isn't that
babies,
what they say?
right?
Yeah.
They're babies. It would be insane for anybody to touch a small human being with any kind of force or aggressiveness, right? And so the people that I send my babies off to have loads of experience. You know, they're, you know, in our community, predominantly pediatric occupational therapist, chiropractors are the main people that I send to. But, you know, there's also physical therapists that have pediatric training, and sometimes there's osteopathic doctors, and they can do some work with babies. But so there's, when I talk about that three-legged stool, there's the lactation portion, right? Mm-hmm. So the initial assessment, yep, and dealing with breastfeeding issues. And mm-hmm. then we send the family off to for the body work to start the get the baby moving and grooving a little bit better, mm-hmm. right? Because if there is a tongue tie, mm-hmm. and it is causing dysfunction, and that's an important distinction between seeing something and actually it impacting function, right? And we can talk about that. That baby needs to be ready to have the procedure, right?
Yeah. So can you say
going
that again?
Off? Yeah. The baby.
Go ahead. Say it again, because it's very important.
The baby needs to be ready to have the procedure. It would be almost like no one would go off to have knee surgery before you have physical therapy and before you have imaging done, right? So just someone self-assessing and going off and having a tongue tie release is going to be a very disappointing experience 99% of the time,
yep,
because there is, they're not understanding how that tethering here impacts everything else.
Right.
And so when we work as a team with the body workers, right, there's a communication that happens between me and the family, and me and that other provider, and the provider and the family, right? We're all working together to decide when and if the baby is a good candidate to yeah. have the procedure done. Yeah. And then the third leg of that stool is the person doing the procedure. And we have certain people that I refer to all the time because they have done thousands of these.
Right.
And
they understand breastfeeding. That's a big part of this. You know,
yeah.
the dentist down the street with a pair of scissors may say, oh, I can snip that. But do they really understand what you just talked about, the larger picture of the larger baby? No.
Yeah. And it's not even, yeah. And it's not even that they can snip. I mean, I've seen dozens of these done. I've assisted in them, but there's a difference in seeing something and clipping it and making sure that you're doing an adequate, efficient procedure, right?
Okay.
So many
yeah.
people will do a scissor release, and I call it a ceremonial nicking, right? So they come back in. Oops. Like, so sometimes I'll have a family that comes in, we make the assessment, and look, I can't make the family do anything that I recommend. And I always say that, I'm like, look, I'm going to give you support. I'm going to give you information.
I'm gonna guide,
this is your job.
Thrive,
you
yeah.
have to make these choices. And then sometimes I won't see them for a while, and then they come back to me and they're like, oh, we went and had the procedure. And I was like, oh, okay, who'd you go to? And they tell me, and my shackles go up, and I look in the mouth and I'm like, do you see what I'm seeing? Like, it's still there. And they get really frustrated, and they've been handed by where they have gone an astronomical price tag
oh, yeah.
for what they just spent. Astronomical.
Sure.
And I feel bad for them. I really do feel bad for them. It's that, you know, they went, someone said, oh, don't go to Susan's person, go to my person, go to my friend, or go to this doctor. And so there is, right, not all providers have the same skill set.
Right. That's true.
And you know, I talk about the three-legged stool, but I do want to throw in there the pediatrician as well.
Mm.
Like, it's really lovely when the pediatrician can be on board with what we're doing, because I never want a family to feel like they can't tell the pediatrician because they're worried about getting shamed, right? And that happens too.
That's true.
But
the family's
and,
in the middle, because the pediatrician's going, no. And you're like, but they're coming to you because of a baby who's gaining poorly, or maternal pain, or a terrible latch that, you know, parents say to me sometimes, it takes me an hour to feed the baby. I'm like, why? And then they get unlatched, and I'm like, because they can't stay on. they're on, they're off, they're on, they're off, because that tongue cannot hold on to the breast. And I'm like, you know, the pediatrician is seeing this, but the family is dealing with this. And that's a really tough place for families to be, isn't it?
So I do think that, I mean, I love the people that I send my babies to for body work. Like, I can't do that stuff, right? I can give them exercises, you know, and sometimes the homework assignments that the, say, the chiropractor will give them might be similar to what I'm doing, but they're doing this amazing, really gentle cranial sacral therapy. I just had it done on Friday, and it just felt so
Ooh, that sounds cool.
amazing. Like, it was just, it's so relaxing, and it's so important for the baby. You know, for a baby that's tongue-tied and can't feed well, that's going to impact their nervous system. And
Right.
that's why we see so many babies that are in kind of the state of fight or flight, right? And I don't like to use that terminology with families because then it makes them feel bad. But that's what we're seeing. We're seeing babies that are really stressed out because they can't eat well.
Imagine,
No.
and you're doing the best you
And
can. You're doing, and I say to parents all the time, and like they use the term "lazy feeder." Doesn't that drive you crazy? I'm like,
yeah, no, it drives me
no,
crazy.
this baby is not lazy. The only job for them to survive is to eat. If they can't do that, oh my God, how stressful is that for them? Yeah,
And
definitely.
so I have, you know, families coming back to me after they've gone to the body work, and they say, you know, I was really nervous about going to the chiropractor, right? Some people have some ideas about what chiropractor. I always say there's no twisting, cracking, popping with babies. That would be
Ever,
inappropriate.
ever, never.
And and they come back and they're like, wow, my baby was so relaxed. They slept really well after that.
They had a huge poop.
Yes.
This, or they had this massive poop. And I'm like, that's because they relaxed and they had a giant poop.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be able to do my job without my other teammates, right? Like, it's just so nice to have people on board that you can refer to. And it's really especially nice, kind of back to the pediatrician thing. It's really, really nice when the pediatrician trusts, like, say, trusts me or trusts you to make an assessment and to help the families, and they're on board with that. They're like, okay, I don't know, but she knows what she's talking about, so listen to her. Like, it's very validating as a
We're all on
healthcare
the same
provider to
side.
be respected that way.
We want babies to grow and thrive. We don't, we're all on the same side here. We're not. Yeah, that's important to recommend. Let's talk a little bit about what happens after a phrenotomy, and talk to me a little bit about how you guide your families through doing those stretches afterwards.
So, you know, the one thing I will say is that, just leading into answering that question, is that when we have a conversation with a family about doing the phrenotomy, it has to be done for functional reasons, right? I have seen babies who, when I do an exam, I'm like, oh, look at that frenulum under the tongue, but the baby has great tongue mobility, right? It's got great lateralization. The tongue lift is excellent. There's really, like, you know, there was just maybe a little stuff that we had to work out. And I'm like, wow, okay. So just because I'm seeing something doesn't mean it's causing dysfunction. And I think it's really important
Thank you for
that
saying that. Yeah,
families
you're right.
understand the difference between tongue mobility and tongue function. They can be two different things. They can also be connected, right? I have seen babies who have had terrible tongue mobility, but pretty good function, and vice versa, right? So we're trying to help improve things. So if we make that recommendation to send a family off for a phrenotomy, it is for functional reasons. What is going on right now? Yes, there's always the question of what kinds of things might we see in the future, and I think it's fair to answer that question. And you can make some guesses. Well, okay, if that frenulum is attached right to the tip, we might see X, Y, or Z. If it's attached farther back, sometimes there's problems pronouncing certain letters, but we don't have a crystal ball,
No, we don't.
right? We don't.
So parents who are
And so we
thinking
have
that
to
they're going
make.
to treat for speech as a tiny baby, that's where this conversation comes in, correct? You say, well, you know, maybe not.
So I always just think it's really important that they're making decisions for the right reasons, with the understanding that There is no procedure that can boast 100% success rate 100% of the time. And that doing the procedure, even if you do everything according to plan, you may not get the results that you're hoping for.
Not a guarantee.
Right? It's not a guarantee. It's not a magic bullet. Generally, we see improvement. Otherwise, we would never recommend it. But I always tell families when I'm counseling, like, look, here is the range of what you're going to see. You're going to maybe ultimately at some point see full resolution of your problems. Worst case scenario, you don't see any full resolution and there can be anywhere in between. Right. So the families come back in afterwards and they're like, because I want to see them within a few days after the procedure. And they're like, you know, this is really stressful. I've got to do these stretches, which you asked me about. And I'm not seeing any changes. And I'm just like, whoa, 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 right? Your baby has been using its tongue in a particular way since they were about a 6 to 8 week old fetus.
Right.
That's when that separation happens.
Their tongue is created really early in gestation.
And the brain has been wired to use the tongue in a certain way. And so just because you've unanchored the tongue or the lip or the cheeks doesn't mean the tongue knows what to do, right? The analogy, I always use a lot of like silly analogies in my consults. I'm like, I tell the family like, okay, I've just flown you to England. I've given you the car keys here, drive. Right? Like,
how's that going to work out for
the wrong side of the road, right? Yeah. Like your brain would be just like a buzz, right? You would be like looking in the wrong direction, right? Everything would be off. And so what I love to do at the first visit, and I actually do this with all follow-ups, is I like to start a list of what changes have you noticed? Because sometimes they don't think they've noticed any changes, but then they'll say, oh, you know, but actually the baby's face looks different, or the lips look different, or now I can see my baby's neck. I guess I didn't realize that I'm starting to see changes.
Yeah.
Right. And I keep
a
list.
Little bit better.
Yeah. Or look, your baby just got an extra ounce.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's starting to feel better. It's important to kind of put that, like you said, in this continuum of maybe it could start to feel better here and things could look better, but maybe even better out here. So it's a continuum of improvement.
Yeah. And I think families think that they're going to have that unicorn baby and they don't exist. Like, you know, I can't really think. I can think of one person who I sent off for the procedure and they came back once and I said, everything's great. And I never saw them again. That's not usual.
Yeah.
Right. That was a little bit of a unicorn, but how do I know what ultimately happened with them? You know, the baby has to learn to use the tongue differently. And that takes a long time. And that takes a lot of creativity on our part because it's not like me saying, okay, Lori, I want you to stick your tongue straight out and waggle it side to side. I want to see you create a cave, all the things that we would do as a kid or an adult doing myofunctional therapy, right? Mm. Because you're compliant, you're going to have your assignment, you're going to practice 3-4 times a day,
right?
Babies are non-compliant, right? They don't like to follow directions, right?
You do not want those fingers in there.
So we have to like do things to get them to function differently. You know, we have to do some suck training and we have to make sure that when the baby's at the breast, that we're optimizing the amount of milk that they have access to, right? Because a baby will suck differently on a breast that doesn't have enough milk as opposed to a breast that has a good milk supply. So we have ways of helping to augment that. And, you know, so I always tell the families, like, we're asking the baby's brain to remap how to function. And that takes dozens and dozens and dozens of inputs to bring that about.
Right.
So I just try to keep the family's expectations really low. Right. And then the other part that you asked me about, but I just wanted to kind of mention all of that, is there are these stretches that are probably the worst part of the procedure.
You got to talk about it.
Yeah. You know,
got to talk about it.
There are going to be these little wound sites in the mouth, you know, under the tongue, obviously, typically the tongue and the lip, occasionally the cheeks, which are called buccals, B-U-C-C-A-L-S, buccals. sometimes lower, sometimes even down here. And our mouths heal really quickly. It's a nice thing, right? Like, think the last time you bit your tongue and it bled, like all of a sudden it stopped bleeding, right? And babies heal extra fast. So we need to get in their mouths several times a day to stretch the tongue, to stretch the lip, to stretch the cheeks. We want to retard the healing of those wound sites. We don't want them closing back up too quickly.
To grow back together. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't have any good studies on what are the best stretches and how often to do them, because we
No.
can't take two babies and, well, this baby, we're going to do it on, you know, two twins. And it just doesn't work, right? All we know is that the stretches are really important, but how to do them, how frequently to do them, that varies by provider. Each provider has their own
Oh, yeah. Each
protocol.
lactation consultant, it seems, has something a little different up their sleeve. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of take a Dr. Seussian approach. I like a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I just say to the families, like, look, your provider is asking you to do it this way, and you really should listen to them, but I'm going to give you my feedback.
I'm going to give you some advantage.
And yeah, and sometimes their fingers, they just can't get it right. So I'm going to show them. I have like three or four different ways to help stretch the tongue up. And I show them how to do it. And I'm like, which feels more comfortable to you? Do you like to use gloves? Do you not like to use gloves? Right. So I just think it's important that they understand going into it, that it's a commitment.
Right. And it takes a while, it takes weeks.
Yeah. It takes weeks.
I
It
think
takes a long time.
if parents understand that with the discussion that we just had, I think it puts them at a different mindset, makes it doable if they understand that. It makes it the expectation correct, right? The worst part of it is going in, like you said, to go get this little snip and clip and this little ceremonial notching. I love the way you said
Nip
that.
it, nicking,
Nick
ceremonial
it.
nicking.
I've seen a nick from a local provider, and I could literally see it was a nick in the frenulum. So, I
Sorry
think
about the lighting. The sun is setting, and
I
I'm
see
like
you.
getting
I
all
see
sip and
you.
light.
You're looking like the movie star that you are. But I think, no, I think we've had a well-rounded discussion, and we could probably go another hour or two and bore the hell out of anybody who wants to listen to us. But it's an important conversation because it's not, it's especially between two IBCLCs, I think. So the message I think we should really be clear about is that IBC, your localized IBCLC should have this education. If they don't, you can ask them and say, how much work do you do with tongue ties? And I think there's something wrong with my baby's oral anatomy. Is this something that you feel that you're skilled with? And yeah, I think it's okay to have that conversation. We're not all trained the
And
same. You and I know that.
no, we're not. And I do think, and I just want to clarify something. Sometimes I'll have people come in and they'll say, you know, the lactation consultant at the hospital said my baby looks a little tongue-tied, but everything is going okay.
Oh,
And
it's just a little. They shouldn't need any help.
this is how I explain to them. I'm like, there are people in our field who would take great offense at that statement, and I am not one of them. And here's why. Some people would say, you are either tongue-tied or you're not, right? For me, it's a matter of function.
Right.
Again, and I kind of said this before. And so if someone says, oh, your baby's a little tongue-tied, well, I'm going to take a look. I mean, I'd take a look anyway. But it gives me a little bit of a clue, right? And sometimes that will be said because someone is seeing something, like say someone in the hospital says, I see a little tongue tied, but everything is okay. There's only so much they can do in the hospital, right? And I actually prefer for babies not to have the procedure done in the hospital because you're missing, like you're just getting one little part of getting to better breastfeeding. Whereas what we do is very comprehensive, right? We're going to be focusing on all the parts of making breastfeeding more effective. So I always say, like, it's really when someone says, oh, it's a little tongue-tied, it's a degree of, to me, of functionality. How dysfunctional is the baby and how functional is the baby?
How functional is breastfeeding and what's working and what's not? Yeah, that's a
Yeah, I mean, like, I had a baby in last week who was absolutely tongue-tied, but they were doing pretty well,
doing okay.
right? You know, like, she didn't have any sore nipples, right? You know, for them, the issue was poor milk transfer. She had a lot of milk, so we had to talk about how to protect her milk supply. But the baby was latching well, was happy at the breast, was getting some milk, but just not enough, right? So, of course, that baby was not a very functional eater, but when it came to the latching part of it, like the mom didn't think there were that many issues going on, right? So it's really like, what's happening at the breast? Can the baby adequately transfer in a reasonable amount of time, comfortably and effectively? And if they can't, there's a dysfunctional
Right. And then we can
issue
have
going
this
on.
conversation, or we can have the conversation about what we're seeing functionally or physically, and then tether that to maybe we have a little time to figure out what we want to do. Maybe we have a little
Exactly.
time to show for the baby to kind of show themselves about what's going to look like. But
Exactly.
you're right about it being such a functional and such an individual exam. I mean, it's just every mom and baby present differently, and every family is going to choose different things about their care. So I think we all, that's why it's important, I think, to make sure that this care stays within the IBCLC community, and we look to our doulas and our CLCs and CBEs and all of our lactation supporters to identify families maybe in their purview that are having trouble and send them to us to be able to do this comprehensive work. And I think it's going to be interesting for people, and I'd love to hear from people who are not IBCLCs who maybe listened to this podcast and thought, oh, I didn't know that so much went into that. I think that's going to be part of this, Susan. I think that's why this is so important. So I think that message is going to be, find the local IBCLC in your community or online, because you and I both do, many of us who are skilled with tongue tie management do virtual visits as well. We need to talk about that because accessibility is a whole nother, that's a whole nother podcast, right? So listen, I'm gonna stop us because we could talk forever. But tell people how they can find
Did
you
we
and
cover
Susan.
everything, Lori? There's so much
No,
more to talk
I've got whole, I got things. No, we can even come back on another time. But how can people find you? Because we're going to definitely put your website and all of your socials up. But tell us how we can find you.
So I have an office in Farmington at the Exchange, which is right across from UConn Medical Center.
Connecticut, just putting it out there,
In
Connecticut. Yep.
Connecticut, Farmington, Connecticut. You can find me at foresterlactation.com with two R's. I'm not very good on social media, admittedly. I skulk, but I just don't have the energy to post a lot of stuff. But
But
we
that's okay. People
do,
can find you there if they're listening. They can
I
like,
look, I'm no, yeah.
yeah,
So I,
all the kids like Instagram, and I'm like, okay,
yeah.
whatever.
So we do home visits. So I have a colleague, Lauren, who works with me. We do home visits, we do office visits, we do telehealth visits, like just what we're doing now.
Great.
Occasionally I'll do a telephone consult, but that's like, for someone who has a very specific, almost non-baby, directly baby related issue,
Questions or quick
questions kinds
things, right?
of
Right.
things.
Yeah.
And I would say that probably, 85% of my clients get coverage. We have similar, there's ways that we can make it so that you don't have to pay, but someone pays me, right?
Yeah.
So don't assume that it's always going to be out of pocket. Sometimes our people do pay out of pocket, but on my website, I've got it written in very detailed, explicit explanations of
Right,
how to go about.
how to try and get coverage, right? We know that's a whole, I did a whole episode on insurance coverage and what a show it can be. Yeah. Well, good. People are going to be able to find you, and you are a wealth of knowledge, and I'm glad for your mentorship and your friendship, and I
Oh,
know
thank you, Lori.
you impact a lot of families in Connecticut and beyond. And I'm so glad that you joined us today because this is a big deal. And a lot of people, there's a lot of knowledge issues around tongue tie. Like I said, there's more to discuss. And so I love what you said at the very beginning. Make sure, as a birth professional or an IBCLC, that you seek this training out. Yeah, it may cost you some money, but it's worth it. And parents expect that of you.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it costs money to get trained, but that makes you a better provider.
You have to. You can't just do the minimum. But your families deserve more than that, right? They come to you. They
And
expect this.
I love learning new things.
Yeah.
Like even if I do a conference and I get one nugget out of it that changes how I practice, to me it
Oh,
was
it's
worthwhile,
worth whatever you
right?
pay.
So,
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Lori. This was great.
Have a good day.
Take care. Bye.